day.
So the first thing in the morning, everybody was to the stalls, cleaning their horses off, getting ready for the day, taking them out and show them, you know. So Dad's seat was kind of gravelly up there, you know, well, in front of the barn, not too good a place for a horse to lay down and perform, but he took him outside with just a halter and a lead rope on him. And he said to old Don Jay, he says, lay down. He had him trained, so he said, if you lay down, you're dead. He'd lay right out and lay up flat. And he would not move until Dad snapped his finger. So he laid out there. And the Dad, he said, he hadn't hardly got stretched out when the fellow next door looked out in the currycomb brushes, and he said, Mr. Fuller, your horse sick? Dad said, well, I don't know. Funny, he came out here and laid right down. And from that, he came over to him. From that, before he got through, he had 9 or 10 horsemen all around that horse. Dad said, I could hardly keep him alive. And they filled up his ears, and they filled up his pulse under his jaws, and they filled around his heart. And they had all kind of suggestions. And they said, well, funny, he lay that cat. He don't seem to be in pain. He isn't sweating. But there's something wrong. And finally, one fella knelt down behind the back of him on his knees. And if you ever listen to a horse, ever get a chance to stand inside of a horse and they're quiet, put your ear right back by the hip bone down, bend over and put it up against the belly up tight and listen. You'll swear there's a worse thunder shower in there that you ever heard. It's This fella knelt down behind the horse and he was laying his feet out this way and bent over and put his ear on that horse's belly. He says, well, he hadn't got a stoppage. He says, it's still emotional. When they have a stoppage or colic or something, everything stops. You don't hear anything. This fellow says, well, he hadn't got a stoppage because he says it's still moving in there. And I like, but he says, it's something I don't know what to do. Well, he gets up and he says, I'm going to see if I can find the phone and call a veterinarian before he gets any worse. And Dad said, I looked around and couldn't see anybody else coming. Snapped his finger and the old horse jumped on his feet. Then he showed him what he could do with him.
Wonderful story. No, I never heard that.
And another thing he used to do with him, he used him for breeding. He was a Hamiltonian, and which is a trotting horse, and but you don't hear much about him anymore, but back then there was a lot. He had him trained to take him out in the yard. Earl hold him in the pitcher, but Dad could take him out alone without anybody, without any halter on him, just a little whip in his hand, out here in the yard, and tell him to lay down, he'd lay down, tell him to roll over, and he'd roll over, tell him to sit up. When he's sitting up like a pitcher we got, he'd ask him to say his prayer, and he'd put his nose down his knees and go, ooh. And when he was standing, people would come and say, look at him, and they'd go maybe want to be, have a mare bred to him. They'd say, how old is this horse? And what they didn't do, they never watched Dad, but they'd stand beside the horse, and Dad stand in front of him with just a little lead rope, just up in the open. Dad'd say, Don, how old are you? And he'd take his right foot and tap it on the floor. And everybody was watching him. When he got to 10, 11, whatever he was, 12, he'd stop. He never watched Dad. Dad stood right in front of him. He had his hand down his hip, and he just made his finger. And that horse would tap his foot along Dad, and Dad stopped, he'd stop. Then they'd say to Dad, how's a horse know how old he is? And Dad said, well, you know how old you are. Yes, but I'm not a horse. What about next year? Well, Dad said, you going to tell him you're the same age next year you was this year? Well, no, but, well, he said, he'll tap his foot once more. He'll know he's 1 year old. And nobody ever discovered what Dad did. But all he had to do was just say, old are you, Don, and make his hand, keep it on his side, just do that, and old horse eyed him. And
how did he ever train him to do that?
I don't know. And I don't know. Earl knew how to train a horse to lay down and set up, like Dad did. But I left home, I don't know, Dad never done in that training when I was coming along. I don't know. I don't know yet. I've got ideas, but I don't know. I don't pretend to know.
So yeah, Earl had a horse, I guess he did that with, and then saw him again in Connecticut or something.
Well, there was a Hubbard stallion that Dick Hubbard bought. 4-year-old old Matt Judy at Holbrook. He brought him up, and Earl trained him. I got a picture of Earl with him in the cart on the 4th of July. And Dick later went out of the business and sold him down to Matt Judith, and Earl went down, I guess, I don't happen to see him, that horse remembered him. and he showed that fella how he could take him out and have him lay down. And so, well, he was good. He was good, Earl was. He was a corker. He was much better than Lorne. Lorne was all right. Lorne used to, after he sold a big farm, that like he bought down the foot of Sugar Bush, and he used to ground and shoe horses. And that like he used to come going to Randall and shoe Cliff Murray's horses. And that like he had his Ford and everything on the truck. And that like, but he never was as handy as the rest of us around the horse. He loved oxen.
That's what Earl said, that he was the...
He could drive oxen. He could teach oxen to do almost anything. And he could drive horses. But there again, my dad said to him many times, you're so gomming with those reins. That was a word of my dad. You're so gomming with those reins. Well, he didn't have a knack of picking them up, and he could drive them and get around places. But, you know, he wasn't like the rest of us.
Well, it's a gift.
Yeah. But he'd take a pair of oxen steers and break them, and after he'd had them a while, he could, of course, they had the ox cart to hitch them onto, and we used to have to draw manure and load by hand and spread it by hand. And after he'd had those oxen a while, he could come in, empty cart, come down around to the barn to talk to them and swing around and back into the door under the barn and sit all the time up on the end of the cart and just talk to the oxen, and they'd back that cart right around into the manure pile. He wouldn't have to get on the cart. But he wasn't handy with horses, but he was a good hand at shoeing, and he could handle them, and boy, he'd shoe some and nobody else would ever think of shoeing. But to handle them, to drive them, or train them, or break them, he wasn't there. And that's one thing that Earl was excellent on, and another thing, all one side, my brother Clarence, although he's 4 years older, and he and I never got along good together, because he was older and he wanted to boss me around, and I guess I had the disposition and I didn't take orders from him, and I was all able to do whatever he could do and a little bit better, and so we never get along too good together, but I had to hand it to him. He was a good horseman. He was a wonderful horseman. But I won't say no more about him.
Yeah, Earl never spoke much about him. He said I guess he lived down in Springfield? Or
down in Connecticut.
Connecticut.
Yeah. Mm. And, but he was a good horseman. But don't do business with him. He's gone now. I'm the last one left.
I know you are.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Well, Earl went to school for a while out in, was it in Chicago? Did he?
Not to my knowledge. This between you and I, believe it or not, you cross it off the tape. Earl, my brother, I think the world of him, but he exaggerated.
Well, I know that, and I didn't know whether he'd actually gone to school or.
You know, he'd make up things, and he'd tell them so. You know, you'd believe him. But I know, and I'm 90 years old, and you can inquire about me and that like, and I'll knock my head with a hammer if I never lied to anybody. And anything that I said I've done it, and I can prove it.
That's certainly your reputation.
Well, that's the way it's always been, and that's the way my dad was. But
did Earl actually drive turkeys to Boston?
I don't believe it.
Because it seems...
I heard that story.
He told it to me a number of times.
Yeah.
But it seemed late, and people weren't driving stuff to...
Oh, that's something he dreamed up. It was a good story.
Well, he probably heard it from somebody
else. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I think all of his stories have a nugget of truth. He heard them maybe from somebody else.
I mean, it did happen. And then just put it in there. I was one that did it. But as far as I'm concerned, if it went back and traced and checked, I'd be willing to gamble my home if he never... I don't know that man ever went to Boston. And I've heard the story sometime about see, was driving stage over to Roxbury.
Yeah, well, now he told me he did that for 4 years.
He did drive for a short time to help out carrying the mail.
Yes.
Yeah, he actually did. But I heard some of the stories, some about somebody he brought back, and I doubt if it happened, but I say he was a good-hearted fella, but he would tell some outlandish stories that never happened. And I heard Dad say many times, a lot of times, he and Clarence. Lorne was another fellow, my brother next to Earl, 2 years younger, one of the most honest men you ever met. If he told you something, it was so. And if he told you he'd pay you such a day, chances are 9 times out of 10 he'd be there the day before. That's the kind of a fellow he was. And but Earl and Clarence, I won't say what happened, but I know.
Well, I was curious about the, I was sure that, you know, he was telling me about driving turkeys. He'd heard it somewhere, but it seemed pretty late in time.
Yeah, oh yes, yeah.
For him to be doing that.
It was, and part of I'm concerned it never happened with him. That's a bad thing to say here, but I mean it. I'm honest.
Yeah. Well, it's important to know. I mean, in many cases, it's as valuable to record stories that have been passed down to you. I think that's very important.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the other piece of information I'd like to get is whether they're firsthand or secondhand.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's important to know, and I always suspected that, but.
Yeah. But I say, of course, another thing, speaking about myself, I tell people I'm an eighth grade dropout. Well, I didn't drop out, but eighth grade as far as I ever went. And I'm not blaming my folks because I wanted to do more, but I passed my, well, everything but history. I hated history when I went to school. That to me was, I didn't care when Balboa or Columbus did this and that. That to me was no way of, wasn't going to earn me anything. I was out for things that were going to earn me some money to live.
A practical education.
And so, if I do say so, arithmetic was back called in, mathematics, arithmetic, and geography and spelling. I liked it. But the teacher used to get so mad to me. Back then, when you had the class come out, the teacher sat at her desk, and you come out and sat around the circle around the desk in seats, and she'd ask different questions. Well, that was your daily. And just before history class, I'd study what I was supposed to do over and over. So when I get out there, I could answer any question. 6 weeks later, they'd have a written test. Heck, I was, and Mildred Prey was a teacher. Excuse me. She says, Floyd Fuller, I can't understand you. She said, your day marks are wonderful, and 6 weeks from the time you have a test, you don't know nothing. And you know, when I could get a drink of water, I talk
sure,
so much. Yeah. And I've had plans of going to Montpelier High School to stay with Bill and Art. And Art at that time had a cow and a horse, and that was the only house up on Sunset Avenue.
And you said that was moved from?
Fred Cardo Place.
From Warren?
Yeah.
How was it moved?
Well, I'll tell you, get back to that. See, Dad had owned that house, and he used it just for catch-all. And Arthur and Bell had been for a number of years down in West Swansea, New Hampshire. He was a night watchman around the mills. And so he got sick of that, and he also was a carpenter. So they came up back up to Vermont, and he went up and he bought from the Murrays quite a chunk of land. And, well, Bell was related to the Murrays through the Atkins and that like, and so anyway, they were great friends, and they bought quite a chunk of land of Calvin Murray. And so they, of course, lived up and that like, and they come up and they stayed quite a while with Dad and Mother, because that was Bell's home. And they were telling that when spring come, that they were going to, they'd bought that land, and when spring come, they were going to build a house up there, and he was going to go out and go do carpenter work, talking about it. And Dad suggested that, took him down there, and he said, why don't we cut this house down in sections? And he says, I'll take two teams, horses on sleds, and we'll take it out there, and then when spring comes, you can put it up and have a house. He said, I'll give it to you, and we'll help you cut it down. So that's what they did. They cut that house down in sections and loaded on the two-horse Travis sleds, and 26 miles or more from there, probably 27 miles from Dad's house down to out to Arts in the wintertime, and they took that house and delivered it up there with horses on sleds.
How many sections?
I don't remember how many sections there were. It wasn't an awful big house. Since then, I've got to go up again. I haven't been for a number of years. I got to go up again. They tell me that there's a lot of houses built up right now, and also they've added on to it and made it bigger. But look, that picture shows there. It shows it.
Yeah.
And found two big houses high up, but mm-hmm. not two houses.
That's they, amazing.
They cut it down in sections and put it on and went in the wintertime with good sledding. And, of course, it section hung out over the sled both sides, so they, when they met somebody with this horse, of course, they had no automobiles, they could pull out and go by each other, and they took it out there, and went it out there one day with a horse and stayed all night, and I guess they put the horse up in Murray's barn and come back the next day.
That's amazing.
And so that's how that house happened to be set up. And I say, in the meantime, I was going to go out there and go to school, and I was going to help Art, because he was carpentering. I could help do chores around the cow, and also he was burning coal. He had to haul his own coal, his own horse, a little one-horse sled. I was going to haul coal up from the city up there and help Bell and Art for my board. Well, just before school started, typhoid fever set in, and several people passed away. And my mother was kind of a nurse, and she used to go and help people have babies. And anyway, you aren't going out there, she said, and get into that. She said, that's for sure, because she said, back then, of course, they didn't know how to doctor like they do today, if they have it. They said, we'll wait a year and they'll go next year. Well, that was all right. And during that next year, my brother Clarence, which is 4 years older, got married when he was 19 and left. So, when time starts school again the next year, Dad said, well, I can't spare you. You've got to stay here and help me. Clarence's gone. So they would get Laura and I and Dad, and then when the sugar and time and special time, they'd hire a man, but right at the time, we were doing it. So that's the reason I never went to high school.
Oh, and by that time, you had a huge farm.
Oh, yeah. And, oh, yeah, in the meantime, a farm between the Dan place, Dan Carter place, and the Lorenzo Arvis place was owned by my Uncle Amosy. There was a farmer there, and there's a barn there, but there's no house or anything. And Uncle Amosy lived on the home place up top of the hill. And so Dad bought that. So there was five farms put into one. So when he sold out to Lauren, my brother, there was over 450 acres, more or less, but they're all in one barn. And so that is how that come to be such a big farm. And I don't know what Earl told you, but after they bought Lorenzo farm around the hill, they raised a lot of turkeys, and they had a pasture fenced in, and they used to call it the turkey pasture. They raised their own turkeys, and also they had sheep, and they used to make their own wool, and they had the spinning wheel and that like, and Mother used to knit us all wool socks for winter.
Did your mother spin?
Yeah.
I have often been told that there was a song that people used to spin by.
Well, I don't remember.
You know, every different movement, the rhythm of the song changed.
And you know, this is might be interesting. My mother's brother, William Curtis, when I was born, named me. I don't know why, but he named me. My name is Frank Floyd Fuller. I was to always be called Floyd. And when I was born, he named me. He gave my folks a sheep with the understanding they were to keep that sheep, and all the proceeds from it would be to be put into a bank for me. And so that's what happened until Dad had to get rid of all the sheep. A bear and dog got to chasing the sheep so much he finally cut out. But the little lambs and everything, did he used to sell them and that like, and the wool, shear them and sell the wool. I always used to put that in the bank. And it counted up. So when I went to 21 years old and I went down to Massachusetts, I had $225 in my bank account in an offshore, over an offshore, in an offshore savings bank, sheep money.
That's terrific.
And I never spent it till after I was married.
That's wonderful.
And so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. And you had a bear after your sheep?
Yeah. Yeah, bear and dogs. And so Dad says, can't you lose them, chase them, get them scared. And so he cut out having them sold out. Of course, Earl probably told you about the bear that Dad caught in the trap when he lived at home and brought him up and had him in an ox cart to show people.
Yeah, I think he did tell me that one.
And so he was quite, he always was doing something nobody else was even thinking of doing. And so this is an interesting thing, talking about myself, was about my education. I laughed over it going back here a few years ago when the Odgers passed away in town. And so the selectmen, for some reason, one of them came and says, we selectmen had a meeting, we got to have an Odger, and we're appointing you as an Odger to fill in until for this year, the March meeting, then we elect an auditor to take care of that. But until then, it's like men had to appoint somebody for the, this was long, first, late the fall, see, in the first of January, you had to audit books. And this is what was so funny. That year, down in the Randolph Town Clerk's office, Mrs. Wakefield was a representative up to Montpelier, Helen Wakefield, and I knew her, and she knew me well, because I was a Raleigh man for about 7 years after I left Rochester, and my back was bothering me, and I had to get out and truck in. And so I took a Raleigh route, and so she was, so she knew me real well, and she came into the town clerk's office, and she was a good representative. She came back with the dirt and bills and ground and visit people the weekend and see what they thought about it, how to vote. She was working for the interest. Awful nice lady. And she came in and she said, well, I've come down here. She said, I thought I'd get some good advice. And Clifton Chadwick was the, that year was the chairman of the three of us. And he was a college graduate and one time was a town manager here. Awful nice fella. In fact, he's too bad. He's up in the rest home up in Northfield. But anyway, then Jack Stevenson was another well-educated man, been a salesman, came up from Matt Judas some years ago, and he bought a place out beyond the air, and so he was on the board of auditors. and I was filling in for the Fellow Pathway. So she came in, I don't remember what the bill was. She said, I want to get some advice. And she told, read the bill off, and she said to Mr. Chadwick, what do you think about it? And I didn't pay much attention. I was doing something that the papers I was figuring up. And he told her, and she turned to Jack, and he said what he thought. And she turned to me, she said, Floyd, she said, what do you think about it? And I said, why you ask me? I said, I'm an only eighth grade dropout, and I said, I don't know nothing. I talk to people. It's a wonder I got any friends, but they all seem like me. She says, listen, don't talk that stuff to me. She says, an eighth grade dropout is certainly not being an auditor for Taylor Randolph. And I laughed. I said, well, that's what I am. Well, I said, I maybe didn't really drop out, but I says, for your benefit, I'm telling you, eighth grade as far as I ever went. She said, I don't believe you. She said to Cliff Chadwick, is he telling the truth? And Cliff said, I think he is. He said, I've known Floyd for many years, and he said, I never knew him to tell anything but the truth. And he says, I guess I think he's telling the truth. But he said, I'll tell you this much. He said, I'm a college graduate. But he said, you give him a set of figures to add up. We had to add them up by hand then. He says, he'll add them quicker than I am, and he said, he'll be right. And, but why, he couldn't hardly believe it. But I got a big kick out of it.
That's terrific. Well, talking about Warren, describe what Warren was like as a town when you were growing up.
Well, it was a very busy mill town. Way on, we'll start from up to, toward Granville. There was a mill up there that Jim Pierce run, and they made clothespins. And they took them up to Montpelier, and I guess they was finished off up there, but they made clothespins. And then Azro Parsons had a little mill. I forget just what he did do down there, but these are all run by water power, see, on that river. And when you get to the bridge, you have to go to the bridge, it's still there, out of Warren Village, go to Lincoln. Just below that bridge, Palmer and Wakefield had a novelty mill where they turned out the ladder rounds and handles and all that kind of stuff. And then when you go down through the village, a little ways below the village, there was a dam and quite a pond, and there was a clapboard mill. And they used to get out big stacks of logs in the winter and pile them up, and with horses and all that. And then when spring come and it thawed out and the ice went out, they had a lot of water power, and they sawed out clapboards. And from the clapboards, of course, you get the clapboard, and you get the clapboard heart for fence posts, that like. And then that water passed down through the village, which was just with these mills here, that clapboard mill and the lumber mill was owned by Pliny Parker. And he had a big barn and a lot of big horses and a lot of help in the woods and that like. You get down to that other lumber mill, where they sawed out boards and dimensions and stuff and that like, with water, but they put in a steam engine because in the summer when it got water get low, they didn't have power enough, and so they could saw during the summer because they used to do custom sawing and that like. In fact, that mill sawed out all the lumber from my dad's barn in 1913, timbers 8x8. And then the mill was on the left-hand side, and if you've ever been through Warren Village, which you probably have, there's a bridge set down in there, and right the other side of the bridge was a grist mill. Well, they used to grind it. You know, back then, the farmers raised a lot of grain, and they used to bring it in, and they ground it, and they used it for grain for the cows and dairies and that like. And so that grist mill was there. And then you go down and go up over that hill and about, and then the road kind of turned to go towards Wakefield, and the road's still there, and then the other road went straight. You could go up on the west hill and right in Warren. Well, just out around that curve was another mill where they made butter tubs and butter boxes. So it was quite a mill town, and all that stuff was, all the products were hauled all around in with horses and shipped by railroad then. So it was a busy little town. And of course they had the town hall.